Hello, everyone. Welcome to Science Unscripted. It's Connor here.
And Gabe.
And today we're gonna look into the future, into our crystal ball, which is based on data. And we're going to have, finally, a couple things to say, I think, about how this part of the pandemic is going to wind down, the Omicron part of the pandemic.
Yeah, when it arrives, it's pretty intense. If you've seen a graph of what the infection, what the cases, new cases looks like, it goes straight up. And then you know what it does? It goes...
The wall.
Yeah, that wall, it goes straight back down. Way back when the coronavirus thing started back in 2020, they talked about flattening the curve. There's nothing to flatten because it goes up and then it goes right back down. It's like...
So you could say that this one is not flattening the curve. It is thinning the wall, sort of. It's a wall, but it's getting thinner because it's...
Or just wait for the wall to come down. Because it takes about 3 weeks, regardless of where you are in the world, when that spike starts... Within 3 weeks, you've already hit the peak and it's coming back down. It's subsiding. Like it's happened in New York City, like it happened in South Africa. In the UK, it's already subsided, stabilized there. Spain, France, all the places where the spike happened relatively early, it's already peaking and subsiding.
And that is better than the models. We talked about a couple of models there of how they would play out, how this Omicron wave or wall would play out. And they all suggested, we were talking about your parents potentially trying to visit Germany. And at that point, it looked like the peak was going to happen at the end of January and even into early February. And this is faster.
Well, that you're taking into like an entire country into account. Looked at nationally in the United States, for example, the peak has not happened yet. Fauci even came out and said that. Dr. Anthony Fauci said that it will probably be late January nationally when the cases start subsiding. But in the places where the spike has happened, it goes up and then it comes right back down.
Okay, so wherever it broke out first.
That makes sense virologically speaking. Like when you get Omicron, like at my parents' house, it literally infected everyone, boosted. Everyone had their third dose already. Didn't matter. And when you infect everyone around you, within a few weeks, there's no one left to infect.
It's done. It's ripped through.
That's what it does. It rips right through societies and then it's gone. I mean, it's not gone completely, but the spike goes away relatively quickly.
For those of you out there wondering, hey, do I happen to live in a place where this is already peaked? Because that would be the hope, right? There is a way that you might actually be able to figure that out. And it was new to me that this data was so locally available. And these are screenshots I've seen recently of municipal sewage survey data. Mm. And way back at the beginning of the pandemic, we talked to somebody who was responsible for sifting through sewage.
That was Leipzig. Leipzig.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hauke Haien or some. What was his name?
Yeah. I can't remember his name. And he was talking to us about how at that time it seemed really novel that you could look through sewage and see how much virus was in there, how much coronavirus.
Yeah.
And therefore you could in real time and totally anonymized figure out how many people were getting infected at a single time. I've seen screenshots, most of them I believe from the US, where people have taken a look at their local data and figured out that it has peaked there, that they are through the worst of it because they're monitoring the virus loads, the viral loads in the sewage in real time, and you can see the drop off start to happen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's one way to look at it.
We are not
in the poop.
Yeah, it's an ugly way, but also you can do a whole lot of stuff with that.
No, it's mind-bogglingly specific and correct.
Yeah, so that is the good news. I guess this seems to be happening at the very least at approximately the rate that the models predicted, late January, February, and then, my own personal hope is that maybe by the Easter period in countries where that is celebrated in about April, that we might be looking at a pretty normalized world if there isn't a new variant out there causing trouble.
There was an epidemiologist at Johns Hopkins University saying that it will be gone from the United States by July.
July.
Gone. Hmm. Either that means that another variant has taken over and eradicated it that way, or that there won't be anyone left to infect with Omicron. But she said it would be gone by July 4th. So
that's already good news.
Mm-hmm.
Again, a new variant, very possible. One that would very likely, I think, branch off from the Omicron variant. Mm-hmm. That gives us a glimpse into the future, I suppose, of this part of the pandemic. Also, some more information recently that gives us a glimpse into the future of boosting. I've seen a lot of comments, and I've read them online. I've heard them from people on the street. People are... not too thrilled with the idea of living in a world where every couple of months, what, you have to go in, you have to keep bringing around, you know, pull out my phone and show the QR code that I've been boosted and set up an appointment.
I mean, just a minute, given what we just said, would an Omicron-specific boost make any sense whatsoever? It's going to be gone.
Well,
and by the time they have Omicron-specific booster ready...
Okay, so let's
what
get
do you
into
got
that.
For us?
Yeah, I've got, first of all, the European Medicines Agency itself, the top medical body on this issue in Europe, saying that no, the plan is not to boost too often. And there's both an immunological reason for this and also a sort of political social. Immunological is that boosting too often could negatively affect the immune response. I don't have any more information than that. This was actually a quote. There was a press conference given by a guy named Marco Cavalieri. He's the head of biological health threats and vaccine strategy. And he's come out and said, we shouldn't do this too often. That's not good for the human immune system. And then he also, kind of in the same breath, addressed what people are saying on the streets. He said, we need to think about how we can transition from the current pandemic setting to a more endemic setting, and was suggesting that we start approaching this kind of like the flu vaccine. I know we've been talking about that for a while as a goal. Let's get to that point where here in the Northern Hemisphere, every, I don't know, September, October, you go in and you get that one shot. Southern Hemisphere, March, April, same thing. And that would be the idea. That is the goal. And Moderna, I'm sure other companies are trying it as well, has said already that within 2 years, they'll have a dual shot. So it won't even be two pricks in the arm, one for COVID, one for flu. It'll be this one shot. That's already kind of good news. So that's sort of, I guess, the broad stroke look at it. But more specifically, the newest data is out of Israel, which has always been at the forefront of vaccination and boosting. And what do we know about that? And they have, in a first of its kind, I guess, release, finally started talking about what does happen. What does it look like when you have that fourth vaccination and then are exposed to Omicron? Israel has given a fourth shot to roughly 500,000 Israelis at this point. They are in three groups, basically. You have the over 60s, you have the immunocompromised, and then finally the healthcare workers. And what they did is they looked at about 275 healthcare workers, and about half of them, you could say, had four Pfizer-BioNTechs, and the other half had three Pfizer-BioNTechs and then a Moderna shot. And of course, they're healthcare workers. They're constantly exposed to the Omicron variant. And what they concluded is that, yes, if you look at their blood, they do have a higher level of antibodies. But it is not enough to stop a breakthrough infection.
Not.
It does not. This is not the magic wand. This is not the, okay, the fourth shot's going to do it with Omicron. No. In fact, they said there was a small drop in infection rates, but not really very significant. Yeah. And what this suggests is that this is not going to be the plan for everybody. In fact, what Israel, what the health agencies there are saying is that, yes, they're going to continue this strategy for healthcare workers, for the immunocompromised, and for people over 60, because it does make sense for them. That little increase in protection is really important for them, but that possibly for the entire population, it won't make sense.
Yeah.
That leaves, and again, this is not an Omicron-specific booster, but that does leave open the question, okay, when we do have that, would that then make more sense as the booster? Here in Europe, the European Medicines Agency has said that basically, look, whenever an Omicron-specific variant booster comes on the market, we're going to need about 3 to 4 weeks to approve it. So the timeline for Europe, at least, is not March, which is what we've been hearing for a while. It's April. That is going to very happily, luckily, coincide with probably waning immunity for me, based on my third shot. Maybe that's a time where it does make sense for me to get an Omicron-specific booster. Maybe it doesn't. We're going to have more data on that in the future.
At that point, according to the WHO itself, well over half of the continent will have had Omicron by then, meaning less susceptible hosts. And my question is, does it matter at that point?
That's an open question, and I can't answer it. If I've clearly been infected by the Omicron variant, would it make sense for me to get an Omicron variant specific booster?
Would that make sense?
I don't have
reinfection with Omicron once you've been infected with Omicron?
I don't know. But if I haven't been infected, and that's still my hope, I don't plan to, I'm not trying to.
Of course not.
But if I haven't been infected, then it is very possible that at about that time point, it would make sense to get it. Why would that make sense? Well, if we can assume, based on what we're hearing from epidemiologists around the world, that the next variant, and there will probably be a next variant, is going to be an extension or branch off the tree from Omicron, then that Omicron variant booster would likely be the most effective thing we have to stop that new variant.
Spread or stopping it becoming a severe infection?
Severe. Mm-hmm. Severe. Again, yeah. No sterilizing immunity at that point. It's all about keeping people out of the hospitals and preventing severe infection. So that is kind of the 2022 or the first half of it that we're looking at. The end of the Omicron part of the pandemic, at least here in Europe, April for an Omicron booster that we can think about getting if it makes sense at that point. I'm guessing that it will make sense for a person like me.
Yeah.
But all of that, I think, is kind of, on the whole, good news at this point, so long as we don't have to learn a nasty, scary new variant or a new Greek letter for a while here.
Yeah, and if that Greek letter comes, may it be more manageable. If that is the trend from variant to variant to variant, that it's becoming more manageable, then that is good news.
Which, again, we don't know if that's the trend. That's a really, we're rolling the dice and we're going to see what comes up next, whether that's snake eyes or double sixes or whatever is a lucky number for you. We are going to find out. We're playing that lottery right now, as Deepti Gurdasani said. Yeah. If you have any questions about the coming months or anything to add about this pandemic time frame that we haven't included as part of this discussion, please let us know, su@dw.com.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of talking amongst ourselves. We'd love to hear from you guys, too.
Science Unscripted.